Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Mr. Bruce Palmer, who is a CPA and a shareholder at the accounting firm Buckner, Lisicki & Company, and Mr. Chad Paul, who is the President CEO of the Ben Franklin Technology Partners. They help ideas become reality in the Lehigh Valley's version of the Silicon Valley. This evening, we are going to review the results of the Cameron Afshar Greater Chamber of Commerce Survey of Local Businesses in July. And we have been doing this for a long time, since actually 1997, and this is our 67th quarterly survey of Lehigh Valley businesses. We usually collect around 700 observations a year, and in our July observations, we observed that overall business sentiment in Lehigh Valley remained the same as it was in April. The index peaked in October 2015 and has shown some declines through April. It appears that it has, at least for now, stabilized. We have a measurable decline in business sentiment in the Valley since October last. Gentlemen, what have you seen anything like that?
Bruce? Well, I can speak to some of our clients at the firm. It's a wide variety of industries. We have a mix of manufacturing, retail, service. I think some of that's due to uncertainty in the economy, uncertainty with the upcoming election results, and that uncertainty causes some of those business owners to hesitate a little bit, whether that's in the hiring process, the investment process, new equipment, new facilities, new vehicles, those types of investments.
Chad, what about you?
Yeah, we have probably a little different microcosm, and we see the decline in business confidence in incubator companies who ordinarily we would have thought would have decided it was time to graduate from our Tech Ventures incubator and move out into the real world. And we're seeing them holding back a bit, waiting for things to be a little bit better, other investments to be available to them, investment funds or bank financing to be more available to them. So, you know, anytime people are concerned about what's going to happen next, you're going to see them hold back.
Do you see that their revenues or their expected revenues are the determinant factor, or it is a more global issue?
Well, for our companies who are mostly pre-revenue, that's not the indicator.
Okay. What about you, Bruce, your clients?
Again, dealing with most of our customer base, there's probably a mix of one-third, 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 where one-third are basically holding steady, flat, no anticipation of increase nor decrease. One-third are anticipating an increase. They see increased sales, increased profits on the horizon. The other third are more negative. They see the headwinds coming at them. And again, that's causing them to pull back a little bit, not make additional investments. So it's a mixed bag. I always tell my clients, your business outlook is more so a direct result of how your customers are doing. So in certain industries, if their customers are struggling a bit, in turn, those businesses are struggling as well because of that customer.
Right. Has it changed? Has it over the last year, or one-third, one-third, one-third was normal, or is it now more positive or negative?
That has been fairly consistent, I would say, over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. If we go back 4, 5, 6 years coming out of the Great Recession, I would say it was much more pessimistic at that point in time. Mm-hmm. But many of our clients and their businesses have returned to profitability. Again, there's just a certain segment, despite their best efforts, the industries, the customers they deal with continue to struggle, and therefore they continue to struggle as well.
Yeah. Well, the international economy has slowed down as well with all the events that are happening, like Brexit and others, that are creating a tremendous amount of uncertainty globally. And you would think of Europe or a country like England that has 40% of its GDP is in trade, and going and cutting trade relationships is a surprising move, to put it mildly. And that probably affects people. Any of your clients involved in?
Well, we have a number of business clients that do have operations and customers in foreign countries. The issue there becomes, are they affected? What's happening in those local economies? What's happening to those customers in those countries? And again, some are doing well, some are struggling. And I think the other factor, not to get too political, is the uncertainty with the election upcoming. Who will prevail? What will come in 2017? Potential changes in tax policy. Again, when you have uncertainties about the near-term future, people tend to pull back a little bit, and we're seeing some of that with our customer base as well.
Well, in July, the index of plans for future purchases actually rose by a significant 5% above its April level. Of course, in April, it had really dropped down significantly. And looking at the basic decline still, again, going back to last October, we observed that we had a sort of a pretty straight drop through April, and then we are looking at somewhat of a recovery, particularly when it comes in plans for future expenditures. Now, this is a very interesting part, and the increase is this also the only indicator in the whole model that showed significant significant increases. Chad, how do you read that? Or do you read anything into that?
I don't know that I do. No, that's not the world that we work in. Mm-hmm. Our clients are focused on developing new technologies and raising money. Okay. So I think I will defer the question to Bruce.
None of them have actual sales?
Well, I'm not going to say none. Mm-hmm. But their sales are typically very modest because by the time they get to the point of having a saleable product, it's typically time for them to graduate from our incubator and move out into the real world.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting.
Yes, in terms of our customer base with a lot of our business clients, we see a reinvestment in capital equipment almost on an annual basis in terms of those infrastructure upgrades, replacing technology, adding a new vehicle, modernizing, if you will. There are certain tax incentives that have been in place for quite a while, and we encourage our clients to take advantage of those so the opportunity is there. There's that constant reinvestment on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this part was very interesting when I was looking at the data that the significant change that came into plans for future expenditures is the one item that stands out in the survey, in the July survey, as different from all the others who were basically going sideways or very low, up or down, to the extent that were not statistically significant. This one was. And when we asked our participants actual purchases over the last 6 months, while it is lower than it was in last October, the amount of drop in actual expenditures is significantly smaller than the oscillation in plans. And it's interesting to see that. My guess is that obviously when you have to run a business, there is limited ability. You have to change your actual expenditures, whereas when you plan, you have more leeway in that way, that direction.
Well, I would say for most of the business owners, they try to be conservative in their budgets. Reality hits during the course of the year when certain expenditures come to the fore where you've got to make certain investments. I think the analysis is in some of these cases, if you cut back too far, you affect your customer base, you affect your employees, their productivity, and you might save a few dollars on reducing an expense or holding the line on an expense, but you sacrifice more in terms of revenue or disaffected employees in some of those cases as well.
Well, the very interesting part of our survey deals with employment. And this is a very, very interesting area as we are looking at a totally changing environment in terms of mode of production as technology is coming in at a much, much faster pace than ever before. And Chad, this one is your area. When we asked our participants in our survey as to their hiring plans over the next 6 months, their plans, the index was slightly higher than it was back in April. But for this index, it has been going on almost constant for the last year and a half, and at a relatively strong level. However, the actual number of employment does not confirm this level of optimism in plans for hiring more people. I have heard anecdotal stories that companies can't hire welders on one end as well as computer techs on the other end. And how does this jive with our economy now?
I think there's no question but that we have a sort of a disintermediation between where historically our educational system has delivered certain majors that over 50 years were the big ones. Things like chemical engineers and electrical engineers were the ones certainly in the last 30 or so years who were the ones that you couldn't get enough of. As more and more things have become computer-based and software-based, there's a shift in that. So more things that were being done by those kinds of degreed folks are now being done by sophisticated computer programs. Secondly, we don't necessarily need everybody to go to college. We need people who can program, for example. And you can put somebody and a high school senior into a two-year associate's degree program, make them a really good programmer, mm-hmm. and put them out and have them actually making more than a college graduate with a four-year degree who just happens to be in an area that's out of favor.
Right. Yeah, that is a very interesting thing. Bruce, what do you see?
Well, that's a good segue. One of the roles that I have in the community is serving on the Board of Trustees at Northampton Community College, and a big part of their mission is workforce development and workforce training. And so you look at these programs that you both touched upon, the welding, the HVAC, the electrical, all the trades, so to speak. There's a huge demand from employers to find qualified workers in those areas, but there's a lack of participants. Some of that is just a lack of interest on behalf of the students. Some of it's a lack of interest with the parents who are paying for the students' education. And some of it is just the affordability. It's a combination of reasons, but certainly there's a gap there that there's a lot of sources being brought to bear to try and close that gap. But it's a difficult situation, especially for those employers who maybe have demand but can't meet the demand because they can't find the qualified employees.
Yeah, I always tell my daughter, who is a CPA, with TurboTax being around, the hold that she had on her customers may not be as strong as it was before the TurboTax, because now all of a sudden civilians can go there and at least at a simple level calculate those things on their own. So that is a big change that it's coming. But that's not the only direction that our change is happening. We are moving away also from big box. Remember when Walmart was buying all these moms and pops and building these big boxes and going around? Now Walmart has started with the small box and building the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And this morning I just heard on news that Home Depot is shutting down something like 50 different stores because the biggest box is on the internet. Mm-hmm. For the biggest box, you don't need to get in your car and go anywhere. You just need to touch your computer.
Well,
that's it.
No doubt retail continues to struggle. I mean, that's driven by Amazon, places like that, where your traditional retailers, the brick and mortar, have struggled. They're trying to adapt to that new environment, but certainly they're looking to downsize in many cases.
Where are we going, Chad?
Well, as you know, real estate is one of those areas where people are saying it's a place to put your money when the market is not doing so well over the long term. And so real estate is hot. So big box people are suffering because the mall owners are not necessarily being willing to deal. So their costs of occupancy continue to go up at a time when their margins get thinner and thinner.
So the technology that is coming, how much farther would this carry us? Would we have holographic products that we can look or clothes that we can wear and then order?
You know, I think it was somewhere in the late 1800s when somebody wrote a letter to the president and said, I want to close the patent office because everything has been invented. So I would say no. There's no way of knowing how far it's going to go, but I will tell you that I think it will continue to go. We will continue to get smarter. Our technology will continue to take us further, presuming we're able to survive as a species.
Well, that's a major requirement for this thing to continue farther. Is that part of the shopping habits that we have and the change that it's coming is most intriguing? And looking at the numbers, and particularly when you look at companies planning to hire a lot more people and then looking at their actual hires and it is not there, indicates, and they continue their plans, in other words, jobs are still open, it indicates that maybe we are not preparing our workforce to that level, or is it moving so fast that expectations that we be able to prepare things to go that fast is unrealistic?
I think there's certainly elements of both. We have probably three decades of students who weren't interested in studying science, technology, engineering, and math. And so as a result, we have a severe shortage of engineers and scientists in the United States, and it's getting more severe as more of the baby boomers retire. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for us to do a better job of helping people to understand that those are really exciting, cool careers that can make a difference in our future world.
As an ex-college professor, I can attest to the fact that I always struggled with my students not having enough mathematical background and all the new sciences, even social sciences, are all based on math and equations and stuff like that. And if you don't have calculus, college calculus and understanding of mathematical concepts and logic, it will slow you down significantly in the process of learning.
I think another factor, if I could just add to this discussion, the demographic makeup of the workforce, if you look at these aging baby boomers as they start to retire, and then you have a dearth of employees in the middle spectrum, so to speak, and then again a bigger component of recent graduates from high school and college. So if an employer is looking for a new employee with 5, 10, 15 years of experience, they're sort of in that mid-range where there aren't quite as many of those people out there versus the relatively younger people who, again, who just got a degree, just got their high school diploma. So there's a bit of a mismatch there in terms of looking for experienced employees as well.
Yeah. Okay, we got to our first break. And this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Mr. Bruce Palmer, who is a CPA and shareholder with an accounting firm, Bacchino, Lisicki & Company, and Mr. Chad Paul, who is President and CEO of Ben Franklin Technology Partners. Today we are going over the results of the survey of Lehigh Valley businesses that we did in July. And we discussed the first parts of it in the first segment of the show, and we are now getting to look at which companies and which type of companies hired more people or planning to hire more people in the next 6 months. Businesses with more than 100 employees reported the largest increase in their planned hiring for the next 6 months, followed by businesses with 21 to 50 employees. A third of local businesses are also planning to hire more people, while only 5% of them plan to lay off employees in the next 6 months. The layoff plans are now similar to what they used to be before the recession. So we have come to a point which companies are going back to what used to be called normal. The layoff rates are the same as we are going back through 1997 during regular times. It was about 5%, 5 to 8%, and we are right now actually at the lower edge of that thing at 5%. The hiring plans, of course, are also high, but it is the point that as businesses are in sort of a holding pattern, they're not laying off, but not going to hire a huge numbers at the present time.
I think part of that speaks to, for at least your closely held business owners, they tend to view their employees as family to some extent, and they value that loyalty. And as we had previously discussed, there's a challenge in finding experienced people. So there's a reluctance to lay off someone who has proven their capabilities with the off chance that you might not be able to find them or a replacement should you need them in the short term.
And that's particularly true in a smaller company where you don't have another person on your staff who does that particular job.
Right.
So it's not an issue of economies of scale. It's how many people must I have in order to continue to function.
And interestingly enough, in our survey, very large companies were not at the lead in terms of increases in the previous surveys that we did. They came up actually this year, basically the last three surveys that we have done from January through July. We observed that they are becoming a very large planners for, they're planning to hire more people. We had observed companies between 21 and 50 employees to be the lead in terms of expansion for quite a while, actually, really right after the recovery start after the Great Recession. In about a year's time, these size companies, not very large, 21 to 50 employees, were the ones that planned to spend the most amount, planned to hire more people. And when we asked them what have they done in the last 6 months, they report that they have hired more and more. But now we are seeing that the very, very large companies are coming in. However, in the Lehigh Valley, not dissimilar to the rest of the country, almost half of all businesses have less than six employees. And these companies are not planning to expand in a significant fashion. Now, you deal, Chad, with a lot of very, very small companies.
But our mission is to create this next generation of high-paying technology jobs to replace the heavy industrial jobs like the Bethlehem Steel jobs that have left Pennsylvania forever. So our focus is on investing in and mentoring companies that will, in fact, create those incremental jobs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while a startup by definition is typically one, two, three people, we're looking for to make investments in companies that will become 10 and 20 and 50 and 100, given that they are successful.
I would tend to agree with most of our closely held business clients. Their attitude, they've learned to be very efficient coming out of the Great Recession. They're lean and mean. They can get things done more efficiently. Some of that's the technology. Some of it's working more hours in the case of the owners and key employees. But there is a reluctance to hire additional people unless the need is absolutely there. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if they see growth on the horizon, they'll add bodies to accommodate that growth. But absent that, again, they're going to stand pat with what they have.
And very interesting, as we asked the same companies, the same participants in the survey, that those who are planning to hire people, and find out that healthcare organizations are at the lead in terms of how many people they are planning to hire in the Lehigh Valley, and by a significant lead. And to my surprise, information-related businesses participated in our three surveys during the first half of the year were planning to actually reduce size. How would that work?
Well, I guess, you know, I might hypothesize that that's related to better technology, so that more and more of what it is they're doing is able to be done through software, through additional hardware, through artificial intelligence, those kinds of things. Healthcare, you know, that's no surprise that nationally that's been a trend for quite some time. Be interesting to see how long that continues, given, as we're now seeing, many of the health insurance companies that are participating in Obamacare are saying, we're losing hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not sure we're going to keep doing this. So if, in fact, there are fewer insurers and it becomes more of a government-funded environment, that could substantially impact the ability of healthcare organizations to be continuing to expand. But you may have seen Lehigh Valley Hospital Network, Health Network, just recently laid off a bunch of people because they decided they needed to be becoming more efficient. So I'm not sure that it's entirely across the board.
Well, one of the interesting things is that our healthcare costs are so significantly out of kilter with anywhere else on the globe that I know of. There are very few places I know of. I should qualify that. But in Europe, healthcare is significantly lower. In Germany or in France, when you go to a hospital or something like that, the cost is not even in the same ballpark as what we have here. Was joking with a friend of mine that at his organization, a one night staying there costs me more than what the cost would have had been if I had stayed in the presidential suite in Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C. And since I have the experience also in France, and I know that there it was just less than a couple of $100, even if you paid full fare as not having the coverage that they provide, I can see that the rooms are different and all of those, but that much?
Well, I guess a couple of factors could influence that. It would depend on how much of that health care in the foreign country is subsidized by the government. It also depends on the quality of the care and, in some circumstances, the timing of the care. In other words, is there a delay or a waiting list to get access to the health care versus one might experience a shorter wait here in the United States? So I think you have to look at all those combination of factors to sort of make an equal comparison, if that's even possible.
I also think that there is no country in the world where the regulatory burden is as heavy on healthcare providers, on pharmaceutical companies, on healthcare practitioners, and that adds significantly to the cost of operation. And ultimately, somebody has to pay it. So when the federal government says you've got to comply with a particular regulation and there's a cost associated with that, ultimately it's the consumer that's got to pay for it because the money has to come from somewhere.
And that directly is part of the reason why you see some of the hiring in healthcare is to deal with the paperwork, the back office administration, the compliance work. It may not be directly related to patient care in front of the patient, but it's behind the scenes dealing with some of that bureaucracy.
Yeah, but the difference is so much that as an economist, I'm trying to think of how you model this to come up with that level. You can think, okay, costs would be up 10%, 20%, 100%, 200%, 1,000% puts that into what else is part of this thing that it's hard for me to understand.
Well, as Congress discovered when they created the Obamacare system. It was 1,300 pages, and they couldn't begin to read it and understand it. So it's a complicated issue. And with so many payers and so many providers and so many regulators, I agree with you that it's out of kilter. But I don't think that it's because any one group is doing something egregious. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that has been created over a long period of time, and so we're not going to be able to unwind it or fix it in a short period of time.
Well, there are no short-term solutions, that's for sure, but at least the directional movement being there. And incidentally, we have at least one organization called Medicare that has a very low overhead compared to all the other insurance companies and handles huge amount of business. So it is possible to do it with a lot less overhead.
But a cautionary tale, we deal with a number of medical practices as our clients, and many of these physicians do not participate in Medicare because the participation in their viewpoint is not worth it. The monetary reimbursement they get from Medicare is not covering the cost of providing the services in many cases. So it becomes a difficult challenge, if you will, a mismatch between the resources needed for the aging population and the ability to provide those services and the financial resources to compensate those physicians for taking care of those patients.
Well, we definitely are having an aging population, and this will increase the demand on healthcare services. It is just that how much more of the GDP would be diverted into this industry, and why is ours so much more than the Germans, the French, the English, the Italians. I mean, these are not third world countries, and they provide a very, very good healthcare service. Okay. let's get to the next item on our survey. We asked businesses participate to tell us what do they expect their revenues going to be in the next 6 months. And expected revenues reported by our participants shows a significant increase during this year. And that's very interesting because, again, similar to the rest of the process, we saw a little bit of a drop earlier on, but expected revenues recovered, and it's been going up all this year as companies saying they're expecting to get more revenues. And when we asked them, in actuality, how much more revenue did you get? The report also shows a continuous increase in the growth of their realized revenues over the last 6 months. This is a very positive note coming in at this time where we are so much concerned about revenues being there and companies making profit. Bruce, you have your hands in this type of thing.
Well, again, with a lot of our customer base, if you look at how do they grow their business, you've got a couple of different options. You can increase organically by adding additional customers, selling more products, selling additional services. You can take that business away from a competitor. So there's a constant effort at marketing and getting an advantage that way. Pricing increases alone are difficult to come by. With a few exceptions, you don't have too much inflation out there, so it's not easy to pass along any increase in pricing, whether that's a service business or manufacturing, so forth. So the challenge becomes doing more volume, but not increasing your costs to the point where now you've got an increased bottom line if you can hold down your costs and increase your revenues.
Well, there is no question that we are not observing any discernible inflation, despite the fact that the Fed has quadrupled the monetary base, what we call high-powered money. And in any other time, we would have been rolling in hyperinflation long time ago. But This time round, it is most intriguing. I believe a lot of monitors that I used to read when I was in college are rolling in their graves on a daily basis, as they predicted that a 10% increase in monetary base will most probably result in a 10% increase in inflation, and none of that has happened. We don't have inflation, and that part is most fascinating because consumer expenditures are increasing. 2/3 of our GDP is consumer expenditures, and that is going up.
I think some of that may be pent-up demand where, again, people cut back for several years after the Great Recession, and now they're sort of catching up to a more normal level of spending, so to speak. Mm. I think part of it, too, is as new products come out, we're in an age where you have to have the newest technology, be it a phone, computer, TV, so forth, and that drives some of that as well.
Yeah, but all of this increased demand, why aren't we having inflation? Chad, what's your read on that?
I think that we're in a time that is unlike any other time in the history of our country. And so you can't look at the old models and say this causes that. The old adage of all other things being equal, which economists love to say when they're trying to prove a point, so many things have changed. You know, I would be the last guy to be able to tell you how you could solve that equation.
The fact that when you used to go to a store and buy something, and there were a lot of people going to a store, buying store would run out of stocks or would run short, have to use inventory, and would raise their prices. Nowadays, you go on internet and buy stuff, and that event never happens.
Pricing power at retail is gone.
It's gone. It is a totally different animal right now as we are looking at it. And the movement from the big box to service, to a sort of moms and pops that used to exist, where you would go to a store and you know the people there and they knew you and they could provide personal service for you. And that became part of the price that you were paying for the item you were buying. Otherwise, just type it on your computer, and in a short period of time, Amazon will drop it on your head with a drone or something.
Well, I think that's a reality. We talk to our clients about that quite a bit in terms of managing their business. You know, how do your customers view your service, your product? If it's viewed as a commodity, you really don't have that much pricing power. And part of it's competition. In many of the service areas, you have too many of a provider. And so the competition really drives the fact that you cannot increase your prices. If you're too far out of the norm, that customer is going to go somewhere else for a lower price.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we get to the end of our second segment. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
It's tempting to eat everything at the media buffet.
Television, internet, print, billboards, magazines, vanity license plates.
But binging can be exhausting. You need to know who the media makers are and what's in it for them. On the Media can help you sort through the options.
The Miracle on the Media Diet, served weekly.
Tuesdays at 6 p.m. following All Things Considered on WDIY Allentown.
For program support of WDIY, we thank Lehigh County, Northampton County, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Mr. Bruce Palmer and Mr. Chad Paul. We are discussing the result of the survey of Lehigh Valley businesses that we did in July, and this is the third and last segment of our discussions. As one of the indicators that we collect out of the survey, we ask companies about their hiring practices over the last 6 months. And similar to the plans for future hiring, the index of actual hiring over the last 6 months was almost the same in July as it was in April. However, unlike the future hiring plans, actual hiring index dropped slightly below its January level. And that is an issue which is very interesting in and as of itself, But it becomes surprising when we compare it to the fact that initial unemployment claims are at the lowest level they have been since the tight labor market of 2006. We are having a initial unemployment claims level which is associated, based on history, with tight labor market in the valley. But employment levels have sort of leveled off, and our forecast is that even for the balance of the year, we will oscillate around the same levels. What gives, Chad?
Well, as we were saying earlier, I think the issue is that we've sort of plateaued in the employment, absent some major new employer coming into the valley. And also impacted by the fact that there are open jobs, but no people with the right skills who are willing to take those jobs or who are appropriately educated for those jobs.
I think another wild card factor is the recently approved overtime regulations that become effective later this year. It's caused a lot of the business owners to take a step back and crunch some numbers, reevaluate. What compensation are they now required to pay certain individuals? How do they deal with that? It's had an impact on the nonprofit world. Some people don't realize if you look at comparative pay in the nonprofit world, it's somewhat lower for similar skill sets and experience compared to the private employer world. So they're struggling in terms of accommodating this new overtime regulation and how to deal with it.
Yeah, I sit on the board of a couple of not-for-profits, and we have observed this as a major issue that has to be handled properly for our employees as well as to comply with the rules. However, the fact that we have people who are looking for a job and there are jobs open, this has been always an interesting concept of not having the match. Where did we miss the boat? Because it has become such a large part now. Did we miss educational aspects at 20 years ago? Should have moved to a different direction?
Well, I think there was a common thread going back 20, 30 years. Certainly, I've observed, and many of my colleagues have, where students coming out of high school were encouraged by guidance counselors, go to four-year college, get a degree. Not so much a focus on what will that degree do for you in terms of employable skills. Is there a job waiting for you at the end of that 4 years? And now there's this realization, if I get a degree, will I have a job? And so you see a new focus both from higher ed, touting, come here, get these skills. This is now the job that you will have upon graduation. You'll be employable. That's the challenge, I think, getting back up to speed with some of these people to get the appropriate skills, the appropriate training to match the needs of the workforce.
What do you see, Chad?
Well, I go back to things I said earlier in the show, where it has been out of fashion for three decades for people to be studying for degrees in areas that are in demand. And whether that's computer programming or science, technology, engineering, math. We have generations of kids who've grown up wanting to be a movie star or a professional athlete, or they want to go into nonprofit. And as you were saying earlier, the nonprofits are struggling with the issues they have to deal with now, so there are not a lot of job openings in nonprofits. So we have more people. At least my impression is we have more people with skills that don't apply to jobs that are available than we've ever had before.
Well, I think some of those jobs, especially in industry, require a certain level of training. It's not like it might have been 30, 40 years ago where you could come right out of high school, start in a position at a company, and grow into a role and become productive. The businesses need somebody who can start and be productive from day one. So for those students who aren't ready, they're the ones left waiting out in the cold, so to speak.
And one of the parts of included in this is being able to anticipate what's going to happen in future. My son always shows me a part of a talk I gave to his class when the juniors or seniors, I don't remember, about what are the upcoming jobs. And I put together the best data which was available at the time, and he has up to now, he has yet to let me live down that forecast, because so many of the things which were predicted are not the running process, other than computer programmer, which was coming up and at the time was new and all of that. There are so many changes that are happening, and the ability to anticipate what is coming is not that straightforward.
Part of that's technology, as you alluded to. Part of it, I think, is just the rapidly changing business environment. If you go back a number of years, look at Wall Street and all the jobs that were created for people coming out of MBA schools. They were getting degrees in accounting, business, management, etc. And there was an easy path there to get a job on Wall Street and grow within one of those firms. They're laying off people left and right. Those jobs are disappearing because the demand is no longer for the work that they do in those Wall Street firms to the level it was several years ago. And so that's a rapid change that has just affected many people.
And even to reference to that, it's a very interesting part of a mismatch that worked perfectly, where a bunch of people, as physicists, who were expecting to get jobs at the high-speed collider, which was supposed to be built in Texas, and when that was killed, a few of them went to CERN, but the others who couldn't go to CERN found jobs at Wall Street and designed a lot of these models that helped us go through the great financial crisis of 2007. But at least there was an ability for some people to convert the techniques that they had to a totally different industry that they didn't expect to start with. What I'm looking at right now is, because we can't tell what's going to happen in the future, we have ideas that which trends and directions they're going, but how could we design our education for our children and our grandchildren to learn things which will be convertible, which have multiple applications at the same time as highly technical, a oxymoron concept?
Well, I think that the whole educational process has to change, is changing. We need to do a better job of helping our young people, and I'm talking about down to probably sixth, seventh grade, helping them to understand what it's about to be in a particular career, so that at a time when they're making decisions about, am I going to study hard in the math class? Am I going to pay attention in biology class? That there's a reason that they're interested in those things, because they can see an end goal. I don't think we've done a good job historically on helping kids at that age understand what the jobs are, what things are going to be out there, what the opportunities are, and how that would be a quote-unquote cool thing to do.
I think that's a challenge that some of the business leaders in our community have taken up. You talk to people in the Chamber of Commerce, Workforce Development, Manufacturing Resource Center, LVEDC, on and on and on. They put together programs to go into the schools, junior high schools, high schools, and present to those students these career opportunities in the trades, the welding, the HVAC, electrical, plumbing, etc., that there are opportunities that are going wanting, and these are good-paying jobs and great careers that these students can aspire to.
But considering what Chad is saying, that so many people want to be movie stars or ball players, how would you make a welding position be attractive to the kid who wants to be a ball player or a movie star?
Well, if you can document that it's a well-paying job and it's going to be a long-term career, that certainly has an impact on them and also their parents, again, who might be paying for that education, to steer them in that direction. Certainly one has to have the aptitude and the interest to pursue that as a career. But again, I think a lot of the students that might have those capabilities have not been steered in that direction, so to speak, and we're trying to open some eyes for those people to at least expose them to that opportunity, if nothing else.
In when we are looking at these jobs as they are moving and even welding, I don't know how long this level or this method technology will last before it becomes substituted with a robotic version. I saw on TV a model of a sort of a physician. And I'm saying sort of a physician because it was in a physician's office. Patients would go there, give them their information, basically history, stuff like that. And by the time that the physician then comes to see the patient, the machine already has all its projections and forecasts and possibilities of what type of diseases the person would be suspect to, and all of these things already available for the physician to then make a judgment call on. Now, this is still a dumb machine. It has no, it's a very limited artificial intelligence at that level. As these machines are becoming more and more apt to be able to use logic or some sort of logic, where are we going, Chad?
Well,
will we have a physician who is actually a machine at one time?
We desperately need that technology because of the rapidly shrinking number of doctors we have available in an expanding population. And with more and more government regulation and some of the things we've talked about before, where Medicare doesn't provide docs necessarily enough money to cover the costs of providing the service, it becomes less and less attractive to become a doctor. And so this is one way we can apply technology to try to solve a more social and cultural problem. Will we get to the point where you can't see the doctor at all? I hope not.
But if technology can substitute at those levels, how would somebody who starts school now think of what should I study? Because in 12 years, in 14 years, everything I study may be totally belong to history only. Things change.
I think that's going to be true in most career paths. The concept of lifelong learning, trying to go to school, whether it's 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, what have you, is not going to cut it. Already, that's a struggle for many professions. Lifelong learning, constant retraining, adapting, flexibility, it's going to be ever-evolving, and I think those people who have the capability and the flexibility to adapt to this changing business environment will be the ones who have the most success.
So you think that the community colleges now would have a stronger role to play as we are going forward because of that?
Well, I think there's no doubt about that. I mean, they have geared up. I know at Northampton Community College, they just received a year ago a workforce development grant, and a lot of that is dedicated toward developing some of these technologies and programs that will be employing students in things like welding and some of the trades, but to give them that flexibility so that as they advance in their careers, they can continue to grow and prosper. So that workforce development is an ongoing thing that will be with us quite some time in the future.
Chad?
Cameron, before we run out of time, I do want to bring up one other thing that we're seeing.
Sure.
Our mix of companies at our Tech Ventures Incubator has shifted pretty dramatically to about half our life sciences, biotech, semiconductor. That used to be maybe 10%. So over the course of the last 7-8 years, there's been a substantial shift. And looking more closely at that issue, I believe the reason that's happening is that because the big pharma companies, the big drug companies, are shutting down their basic research and furloughing people who have been research scientists in their labs for their careers. And the drug companies are doing that because it's gotten so expensive to develop a drug. Cost on average of $1 billion to get a drug to the point of FDA approval. And the FDA could say no. So as a result, they're looking for ways to take risk out of their new drugs and new treatments. So they do that by coming into places like our incubator and looking at our client companies that are in their spaces and buying up those technologies where the entrepreneur has taken some of the risk out of it for the drug company. So what has that done to our environment? We're seeing people coming from New Jersey, from Maryland, from New York, from Connecticut to set up shop at our Tech Ventures facility. So we're bringing those highly qualified people to the area. Most people don't really know, but it makes a lot of sense. 70% of all the employees of pharmaceutical companies in the entire United States live within 100 miles of here.
Wow.
So as a result, there are a lot of people who have been furloughed. Mm-hmm. They can't go work for another drug company because all the drug companies are doing this. Mm-hmm. So what do? They come and start a business.
Wow. And these businesses are inventing
new drugs. They're inventing diagnostic tests. Look at OraSure Technologies. World's first and only saliva-based HIV test. Who did the FDA come to when they needed a rapid Ebola test? OraSure Technologies. And they just did the same thing with a Zika test. Mm-hmm. All that's happening right here in Bethlehem, and that company started in our incubator on the mountaintop.
Wow, that's great to know. That's fantastic.
So that's starting to change. It's making this area more and more of a life science biotech-centered area.
So you're moving away from computer-based or...
I don't think we're moving away from it. Mm-hmm. I think we have as much, if not more, than we had before. But, you know, at Tech Ventures, we're all about growth. So what I'm saying is we're attracting to this area more and more of that life sciences biotech sector.
Wow. That is fantastic. Well, gentlemen, I can't let go of you, but I'm being signaled that we are running out of time. Thank you very much for helping me today and being my guest. And this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.